Welcome to Unfuck Your Brain. I'm your host, Cara Lowenthal, Master Certified Coach and founder of the School of New Feminist Thought. I'm here to help you turn down your anxiety, turn up your confidence, and create a life on your own terms, one that you're truly excited to live. Let's go. Hello, my chickens. I have a couple of important things to tell you. The first one is, if you want to hear the story of the worst date I ever went on, then you will need to listen to this episode. I was just revisiting this conversation, which was such a joy. I recorded it quite a while ago on the 51 First Dates podcast, and we never shared it with all of you. So we are doing that today, and it's all about confidence and insecurity, which are obviously topics that apply to anyone, not just someone who's dating. But I do also tell the story of the worst first date I ever went on, which I just died laughing even thinking about it again. What a time in my life. So let's talk about insecurity from the coaching perspective. I am so excited for you to listen to my conversation with the hosts of the 51 First Dates podcast. We really get into what is going on in our brains when we are comparing and despairing, and when we are feeling insecure about dating or our love life or anything else. And don't worry, we get to the story of my worst first date pretty early in the interview. So enjoy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy. And this is a podcast called 51 First Dates.
Yay. And we are joined today by Cara Lowenthal.
Cara's a master coach. She's the host of the Unfuck Your Brain podcast, and she's the creator of the Unfuck Your Brain, a feminist blueprint for creating confidence. Thank you, Cara, for being here. We're so, so lucky to have you here today, and we're really excited to chat.
I'm excited to be here.
So let's give everybody, all the listeners out there, just a quick rundown of where we are in 51 First Dates land, because we're in a summer vibe of 51 First Dates. If you haven't been listening, then we should tell you that Kimmy just moved to LA, so we're on two sides of the country right now, which is very exciting.
And sad, but also great. It's really nice
here. It's exciting. And we are, as most of you guys know, Kimmy has, do you want to like say this part?
I know. So let's just go the quick, very, very, very briefly. You probably turned into this podcast thinking, oh, hey, this girl's going on a date every week. I'd love to hear it. And maybe I'll listen to the most recent episode. Here's the spoiler. I'm not going on dates anymore because I met someone. So you can go back and listen from the beginning if you don't want it to be spoiled. If you're a listener, thank you for continuing to listen as we figure out who our next dater is going to be. I think we're going to have a couple different daters so that we can expand our horizons a bit, not just, you know, single white female that I was. Yeah, thanks for bearing with us. That was really ineloquent, but I said it.
I think you did great. And yeah, so go back to the beginning, listen to Kimmy's whole journey. By the time you catch up, we're going to be coming at you with some new daters. But actually, don't do it now because you should listen to this episode with Cara first because she's here. And she and I and Kimmy are going to be talking about confidence / insecurities as it relates to dating.
And just before we Cara, I promise we'll let you talk soon, but I just think this is kind of a perfect transition because if you end up going back to the beginning of the podcast at the end of this little episode here, you'll see that I could have really used a lot of what Cara works with her mentees, what I call them? No.
Clients or students.
I'm sorry, I'm at business school right now, so clearly in that mindset. With her students on, I could have used that at the beginning of this experience. I could still use it. Let's just be real. But anyway.
I'm so excited to talk about this topic with you because I think that every question that we get from any listener, every topic we talk about ultimately boils down to confidence and insecurities. And like we haven't done an episode on it yet. So this is a long time coming and I think really applicable for just everyone in the world.
Yeah, I think it's the root of most women's issues with most things, but especially dating.
Yeah. And then like men could maybe use a little bit more insecurities.
meet in the middle.
Yeah, just like somewhere. But before we do that, we love to ask all of our guests to share a worst first date story. Do you have any particular shitty dates you want to recap?
I don't have any, thankfully, I've been lucky that were like traumatizing, but I did once go on this date with a guy who was, he was like 45 and seemed like a grown up in all the ways he should. He like ran a magazine. He had a kid, like should be a functional human being. And I went to the bathroom on the date and I came back and he was like in another corner of the bar petting this dog and talking to this old guy. And I was like, okay. So I like sat down at the table. I figured he went to get, he was like next to the bar. I figured he went to get a drink and come back. But, like 5 minutes go by. And then like 10 minutes go by. And I was like, okay, maybe he's like kind of stuck there. Like it's awkward. Like maybe I should go over and like rescue him. So I go over and I'm like, hey, like remember me, the person you're on a date with. So I go over there and like make small talk with them for a minute. And then I'm kind of like, okay, should we like go back? You know? And he sort of like is kind of like, oh, I'll be there in a minute. Like he's still talking to the guy and the dog. So I go back to the table. And then about 5 minutes after that, I'm like, okay, like I'm going to go. So I started getting up to leave and he comes back and he sits down. So I sit back down and then we start having a conversation about like whether or not this was weird, which like obviously it was weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, but we disagree about whether it was weird. And then he starts getting kind of hostile and I was like, okay, I'm leaving. Right. So I start to get up. I'm like, I'm going to go. This is obviously not a productive conversation. Like we're clearly not going on a second date at this point. Like this is over. And he jumps up and yells, I'm leaving first and runs out of the bar.
Oh my God.
Wait, I did it. I mean, that is worse than you were like, I don't have anything terrible. Like, that's pretty bad.
Like, cool. Glad you're an actual toddler who got distracted by a dog and then like, ran away. Had to leave first.
The bartender brought me a shot, though. He was like, I've never seen that happen before. And I was like, yeah.
Thank God for good bartenders.
Right. I cannot imagine what my bartenders think. I definitely went through a period of going on a million first dates before I met my partner. And I'm sure they're just like, oh, it's Thursday. She's back wearing one of those same two dresses with a different guy.
Dude, Thursday's the best date day, though.
Yeah, I feel like they know everything. It's like you have your bar you take all your first dates to, and you know the bartenders are like, what is this, 37? What is this woman doing?
Yeah, no, I mean, I relate to that so much. I feel like I had a couple date outfits, and I, like, kind of loved going on a lot of first dates because I didn't have to think about, like, you know, after 5 dates with someone, you got to start, like, figuring out what else you're going to wear. But new dates was great. They could wear the same things. And also the same thing about a bar. Like, we tried to switch up the bars for the purpose of our listeners, like, each week so we could talk about a new place. But, like, in my life, I love going to the same bars over and over. And I know that I did on, like, second or third dates over the course of this podcast. And I know some bartenders saw me like, how many people is she dating? Well, but I kind of feel okay about that just because I feel like men in New York do that a lot. So I feel a little empowered.
We're for sure not the only ones. Also, my neighborhood bar is full of, like, guys in their 70s with their dogs. Like, those are the regulars. So I just feel like it's not just the bartender. It's like all these old dudes are probably like, what do you think about that one? You think she's going to be back for a sec? Like, maybe they have, like, a betting pool going.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
So wait, what was – just to go back to the dog one last moment. Did he have an explanation of why he got really involved with this, like,
he thought this was a totally normal thing to do. It was, like, did not merit an explanation. He was being nice. He was being nice to the dog.
Huh. Yeah. I love that he wanted to be nice to the dog.
Right. The dog. Not the person he was on the date with, but the dog.
Let's worry about this dog who's a stranger.
Yeah. I think that's second only to I once went on a date with a guy who disclosed on the date that not only did he have a partner, they were in an open relationship, but okay, normally you want to disclose that before you go on the date, but also she was about to give birth the next week.
The next week?
The next week. And I was like, no, you need to go home.
And interesting that he ended up disclosing it, but once you were already there, like that feels like weirdly passive aggressive, or I don't like that.
I did not like it either. You're not alone.
I mean, also, like, and I know that, like, people in open relationships, like, I'm not trying to shit in open relationships because I think that, like, if whatever works for you and it's great. But
that's not how it works. I have been in non-monogamous relationships. You don't wait until you're on the date to be not only totally. Like, that's I have a partner cool. And she's giving birth in 6 days.
Well, that's my thing. If I was that woman, it's like, I don't, it's great. It's like, obviously, she's part of the open relationship too. I'm not trying to like take away her autonomy, but like don't fucking leave my side if I'm within a week of giving birth. I'm what if I get like go into labor? Okay.
No. There's someone joining my business school class from Japan who wasn't there on the first day of orientation, and we were told it's because his wife had just had twins. But he's moving here, and she's not moving here. And, like, no shade to this dude in my class who probably will not never listen to this, but I was like, come on. And there was, like, a faculty member making kind of almost, like, a joke about it. I was like, God, I have a lot of us women.
Yeah.
I had some law school experiences that reminded me of that. There was a guy who sat in front of me in, like, torts or criminal law my first year, and they had five children, he and his wife. And he was, like, tan and fit and would, like, hang out on campus to play basketball and blah, blah, blah. And then every photo she looked like, she was, like, recovering from tuberculosis with five children hanging off of her. Like, she just looked like just like frail and exhausted all the time. And I was like, yeah, of course, because she's trying to raise five children and you are, like, hanging out to play basketball.
Oh, my God.
After school. But go home and help your wife.
Well, speaking of that, because I didn't know you went to law school.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about, like, all of the really cool things you did. But also you do, but also like how you got there. So just that small, very specific question.
Well, I think it's every Jewish parent's dream. You know, your daughter goes to Harvard Law School, and then she clerks on a federal appeals court, and then she does a litigation fellowship, and then she gets an academic fellowship, so she can become a law professor, and then she quits and becomes a life coach.
Damn.
So that's what I did. That was the best decision I ever made.
That's incredible.
My parents have mostly recovered. It's been 2-3 years since they heard the news and 2 years since it happened. So they've had some time to adapt. Yeah, I used to be, I've like been a professional feminist one way or another my whole life. So I was I worked at Planned Parenthood, then I went to law school to do reproductive rights work. And then I did reproductive rights work. I litigated, I hated all of this the whole time because I did not know how to manage my mind at all, which is now what I teach people to do. So I did the thing that I think a lot of accomplished women do, which is like you just think like, oh, I get to the next thing, then I'm going to feel confident and happy. So like, okay, well, sure, everyone hates law school, but then you get this clerkship, like then you're going to feel good about yourself. Okay, you got this clerkship, you still don't feel good about yourself, you still don't feel confident. Okay, what if I get this thing? So it's like, yeah, I got like the only fellowship in reproductive rights law in the country in my year. And then like, shockingly, that didn't change my brain or my self-esteem. And then I thought I hated litigation because of litigation. So I went into academia. And that was around the time that I switched to academia. I was still working on reproductive rights and LGBT rights. And like around that time, I found my teacher, the person who taught me kind of cognitive work and how to change my thoughts. And I started doing that work on myself. It just really changed my life. I mean, honestly, I changed my life from listening to her podcast. I listened to her podcast for like a year and used the tools, and it totally changed my life. And then I decided I was going to quit the law and become a life coach. And that's what I did. And now I work with high-achieving feminist women who are experiencing anxiety and self-doubt, who kind of feel like they've like accomplished all the things and gotten all the brass rings, and maybe a lot of them have also even gotten married, had kids, like done all the things you're supposed to do. They still don't feel confident. They still feel like an imposter. They still do a lot of imposter syndrome or feeling fraudulent. And what I really teach women how to do is overcome, I call it like the toxic brew. Evolutionary biology and patriarchal conditioning creates a ton of insecurity and kind of self-doubt. And so I teach women how to overcome that by literally rewiring their brains, changing their thought patterns, so they can produce authentic confidence, which has to come from inside of you, will never come from anything outside of you. No matter how many dates you go on, how many jobs you get, how many gold stars you get, how many people tell you you're great, it's never going to matter. It has to come from inside. Mm. So I teach women how to actually create that.
That's so fucking cool. I'm always really impressed by people who identify their current trajectories as unhappy and actually change it. Like, I feel like most of my friends complain about their jobs a lot. And it's hard to do, obviously. I'm not trying to shade anyone who doesn't do it. I myself am kind of in that place right now where I'm like, I don't know, like, do I like, not about the podcast, about other shit I do, but like, what do I like doing? And then how can I get more into what I want to be doing and less of what I don't want to be doing and whatever. It's very hard to make those changes. So when people have said, like, I am going to light it all on fire and go towards a thing that's like actually brings me joy, that's like one of the things that impresses me most in the entire world.
Well, I think that's actually a big, not a misconception, but I think that a lot of people get stuck in that place. And one of the things that I teach people and that I had to do in my life was you actually can't motivate we all think that we can motivate ourselves to make a change by hating where we are. And it really doesn't work because when humans create anxiety or guilt or shame for themselves, we just want to hide. We just like watch Netflix or eat or drink or smoke or take pills. Like we do whatever we can to get away from the feeling. So the way that I actually was able to leave is actually not by hating where I was, but by learning to love where I was and then being able to leave. And that's a lot of what I teach women because I think we are all raised with this social idea that's like people just with relationships, right? This is a dating podcast. People like drive their relationships into the ground so they can have like a reason to leave, or they think that focusing on what's wrong with a relationship or what's wrong with a partner will like motivate them, or they think focusing on why they hate being single will motivate them to find a partner. And it really doesn't work. When you think about how much you hate your life being single, you do not become magnetically attractive to other people who are going to want to like hang out with you, right? Mm. Like it feels terrible, and that's what you give off also. So I think in a funny way, it's actually like the opposite. You have to learn to love the life you have, then you can change it.
Listeners, if you hear something weird, we had a little audio problem. So Kimmy's switching to recording on her iPhone. We promise we will smooth out.
So yeah.
But also Mercury's in retrograde. And also, as Kara just told us, we're making a podcast.
You're welcome.
Oh my God, that feels so uncomfortable for me to say.
I know, right?
I'm such an apologetic white girl.
And Mercury's in retrograde, because it just disconnected and I didn't hear you. But I think, Liza, did you just say
yes?
Did you just own it? Yes. Okay, good. See, we're being coached already.
She tried to own it, but then
I was like, this sounds weird. Anyway, okay. So
okay,
let's talk a little bit about insecurity in dating. Like you said, you work with a lot of women who are like really high-powered, really like on serious career tracks. Like obviously, I think a lot of women in New York are really driven, focused people who seem on paper like they should be super confident. But how do you find a lot of your not clients, your coachees?
My coachees, they are. Clients or students is fine.
Okay.
Just all kind of manatees, my manatees.
yeah. So how do you find, what do you see as like some really common insecurities related to dating?
Oh, Lord. I mean, everything. I think for a lot of people, dating actually has nothing to do with the other people. They're just like, it's like the other person's, the other people are like a green screen on which people are projecting their own insecurities. And they're just like basically going on a date with their own thoughts about themselves. Mm. Like, it's like they don't even know anything about the other person. So it's almost like it'd be easier to answer the question, how is dating not about people's insecurities? Mm. I mean, what I generally find is like, this is true in any area, not just dating. You have ideas about yourself. And then your brain, right, confirmation bias is your brain's tendency to look for evidence to support stories it already has. So your brain has something called confirmation bias, which means it's always looking for evidence of stories it already tells itself. So if your story is like, good guys are never into me, or the guys just want to have sex with me, but they never want to date me, or I can always get to the third date, but then no one wants to go on a fourth date with me. You're always looking for evidence of that, and you're actually creating more and more of that pattern. Right. And so what I see with dating is that people are driven so much by the desire for validation, which is not a criticism of anyone because our whole fucking society tells women that the thing that's the most important in the world is male validation and that being in a romantic relationship is the pinnacle of like life validation. Right. Some random average Joe chooses you and now you can finally feel good about yourself. And like that's the thing that matters most. So if you teach women that and they hear that for 20, 30, 40 years, like, of course, they are going to be just crazed, right, by the desire for validation and by that insecurity. And so I think the thing, like if I had to boil it down in one sentence, the thing that fucks most people up in dating is that they take dating personally. They take other people's behavior and they filter it through their story about themselves that they're already worried is true. And then they make it match, right? So they make it mean something about them. I would say that's the biggest thing. And then that ends up reproducing their problem, both because they kind of seek out people who confirm those patterns and because they take like a passive role. I mean, I love the title of this podcast because like people will come to me and be like, I just don't know. I've been dating so much. And I can't find anyone. I'll be like, how many first dates did you go on last year? And they'll be like, five. You know, I was just like, you can't, what are you talking about? Like, you can't go on 5 dates and like be like mad that your soulmate hasn't shown up yet. Like, yeah. You got to take some responsibility for this process and take the action that's going to be required. Right. So that's why I love the title of this podcast. I was like, yeah, 51's a good start. Right. Like, you got there faster. But if you were my client, I'd be like, okay, you got to 51. Maybe it's 100. I don't know. We just got to keep going. But the reason people can't is because they take it personally, and that's why it's so painful for them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, like, we've said this before, but I think that the biggest thing Kimmy found on her journey was that, like, going on a lot of dates helped her to understand that it wasn't about her. No. Like, it helped her clear that filter, right? And be like, oh, it's about if I like someone. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I think I feel like my therapist actually recommended I go on like 100 dates. Yeah. I was kind of like your clients, mm-hmm. like, oh, dating is so hard. But I think the numbers game wasn't even if I was still dating now, which honestly would have been easier for the podcast, like mm-hmm. as we grew, like LA dating, it wouldn't be easier for me necessarily, but it would have been, you know, very cool to keep doing. I think like I still would feel like, even before I met someone, I started feeling differently about what a date was. While before it was what you were speaking to, it was, let's see, confirmation bias. Like, can I confirm what I believe about myself, the story I've told myself, the story I know I'm telling myself but still can't shake? Mm-hmm. Like, can I not do that anymore? And I stopped doing that not pretty early on, but like, I don't know, I want to say like 15 to 20 dates in. Mm-hmm. Like, when I go back and listen, like the early dates, like, they weren't all magical, but I was beating myself up afterwards. Mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't like crazy sparks, I was like, well, I didn't get the second date ask, so it means this. Like, I was really using kind of the numbers game and the tally in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, that just rings really true for me. And like, that's where, yeah, you don't have to like going on a 10 dates does not mean you're automatically going to meet someone, but if it can reframe the way you think about it, or if it can reframe the way I think about it, which it did, then I think it opened me up, if that makes sense.
Totally. I mean, my clients are acting like a first date is it's like an Olympic trial for their worthiness. Like, what placard is the judge going to hold up? And the judge is like some dude you met on Tinder 3 days ago. You don't know anything about, but now he's in charge of all of your feelings about yourself. Right. And like, that's mm-hmm. craziness, wildness, whatever the front. Like, you can't, and that's why people find dating so exhausting. Right? Like, if dating is just like snacks and conversation to see if you want to hang out with someone again, which is what I tell my clients to think of it as, it's not that big of a deal. It mm-hmm. is certainly exhausting if every time you go on a date, you are going to run through a litany of self-criticism, take everything personally, make everything mean you're going to be alone forever. Like, yeah, that is exhausting. And frankly, it has nothing to do with that guy. He could be anyone. You do this mm-hmm. on every date, totally. Right? And like, you don't even know who's there because you're so in your own head about it.
Yeah. And I feel like for a while in the beginning of this experiment, Kimmy wasn't giving herself room to like, just not like someone mm-hmm. or not be interested in them romantically, because it was like, yeah, it was, you were seeing people as a reflection of.
Right. You can't, if what you care about, if you are telling yourself that if you don't get like the second date or the third date or whatever, you're not good enough and you're never going to find love and no one will ever like you, you can't even think about whether you like them. It's like not even that question. You're just trying to get the approval. I talk about it as like you're using somebody else as like an emotional vending machine, like a validation vending machine, right? So you're just like, where are my Cheetos? Where's my validation? Like, you can't even tell if you like the other person.
It was literally all I did until I was like 24.
Yeah. Listen, like, if you stopped at 24, that's early.
I mean, it was like therapy. 24 was maybe when I started to stop. And still, I'm still having moments where I'm
we all do that. We're taught to do that.
Yeah.
I'm also having a moment where I'm remembering when I first started therapy being like, it was literally because our Liza and my acting teacher way back when we were 22-year-old babies was like, you should go to therapy. So I was very like worried to my therapist about, is this like self-centered? Like, I didn't even grow up in a house that was weird about therapy. I just had never been. And I was like, is this really like self-obsessed of me to do when there's nothing I really am working on? But really, like, it was really self-obsessed for me to be thinking like, and doing a lot of the other things that I did in an insecure place in my life. For example, going on a date and actually not paying that much attention to the other person because I was just worried about whether they liked me or things like that. Like, it's just funny. I just had this moment where I was like, therapy is like the least selfish thing you can do because it benefits you and the world.
Totally. I just did a podcast episode about this. That like one of the misconceptions about coaching or working on yourself is that it's selfish and self-centered. I'm like, you know what's self-centered? When you hate yourself and all you do is thinking about, what did I say in that meeting? And what does that person think of me? And do I look fat today? And why do my pants fit? And what did my mother think of me? Like, that is self.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Not in a moral way self-centered, but just like people who hate themselves spend way more time thinking about themselves than people who love themselves.
Totally. And right. Putting a lot of burden, I don't know if burden's the right word, but putting a lot of that responsibility on the people around them.
Totally.
Which it's not up to them. And just like you said, like a gold star from anyone.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't do
it. We just keep going back to the vending machine being like, I don't know, I just ate, but I'm hungry again. Right? Like yeah. it's yeah. just like it never, and you want so badly to get that validation. And then what I see sometimes with clients in the beginning before we really like solved it is like they're going for the validation. The guy goes for it, wants to date them, and then they're not interested. Right? Because it yeah. wasn't about him. They just wanted the validation, but they're stuck in that Groucho Marx problem of like, don't want to be a member of any club that would have them. Right? So mm-hmm. the minute a guy likes them, he's immediately like, well, there must be something wrong with him. Like, he doesn't count. I don't get my hit anymore. This isn't a good fix. Now I need like a new one.
Right. So let's say like a listener right now is really relating to what we're talking about mm-hmm. and what you're speaking to kind of more specifically about dating, and they have a date lined up sometime this week. Are there any like, I'm kind of putting you on the spot with this, like what are some of the kind of like actionable steps or like ways you could just start in baby ways? Like mm-hmm. obviously coaching would be ideal to think about that next date. Like what might you recommend?
Yeah, other than go listen to my podcast.
yes, that's true.
I mean, even if you don't have to hire a coach to do this, and I teach people how to do this in my podcast, but what you want to do is become aware of what your thoughts are and see if those are the thoughts you want to think about this. Most of us don't even pay any attention to what we're thinking. We just mm-hmm. like assume it's all true up there and like carry on, right? And so I was like, write down everything you're thinking about this date and then look at those thoughts and see like, do I want to be thinking this, right? Do I want to think like, do I want to go on this date with the thought, I hope he likes me. I hope he doesn't think I'm fat. I hope somebody proves that I'm worthy of love, right? Like, is that the mindset yeah. you want to be in? Or do you want to try to make it like, with my clients, I do tell them like, think about it like snacks and conversation. That's all a date is. You're just going to have a conversation and see if you want to have another conversation. Mm, and then yeah. see if you want to have a third conversation. That's really all it is. Like this without this like huge amount of pressure.
We've all seen the social media posts about hot girl summer. And I'm here to declare instead that I want happy feminist summer. I want all the listeners of this podcast to be happier this summer, even when the world feels like a dumpster fire. It is still important for us to develop the ability to take pleasure in our own lives, to experience joy, relaxation, and rest, not least so that we have more resources to offer back to the world. That has been the story of my life, and that is what I want for all of you. So I am teaching a brand new challenge called the Happy Feminist Challenge this June, from June 17th to June 21st. I am going to be teaching you how to create more daily happiness in your body, how to create that emotion of happiness, and how to connect to your big picture purpose, the life that you want to live, the kind of happiness that really means contentment and fulfillment and satisfaction with your life. These are both things that society tells women that they don't need and shouldn't bother with, and it's selfish to even think about. And you know how I roll. Fuck that noise. This is the Happy Feminist Summer, and you're not going to want to miss it. You can join the challenge by going to unfuckyourbrain.com/happy or text your email to +1-347-997-1784. That's +1-347-997-1784. And the code word is happy. You are not going to want to miss this. Let's get happier together.
But really, honestly, like, whether you do it on your own or with a coach, it is sustained work. Like, you can't do it in 1 week for the next date, all of it, because it's truly about building up your own self-confidence and your own, you know, I mean, self-love, which is such a, like, everybody wants to be about self-love now, but, like, let's just start with self, like, neutrality. Mm-hmm. Most of us are so far over here in self-loathing, right? So, like, even just, like, creating, like, some self-acceptance before you even get to self-love, that's, like, all the dating work is about that, right? Because what people end up doing is like, it's like you abandon yourself in favor of some dude whose last name you don't even know, right? Like you become so obsessed with what this person thinks of you, who you barely know anything about, and has real no importance in your life and who's not even thinking about what's going on, right? And I think it makes women feel crazy because they're like, why can't I stop thinking about this? I'm like upset. Like they know rationally, they don't even know the guy's last name and they just met him on Tinder last week and they know it shouldn't be so important. But what they're missing is it's so important because of what they're making it mean about themselves. So that's the work right. You have to do. When you clean up that work, then you just see it for what it is. Like now, you know, I mean, I have a partner now, but after I'd done this work when I was dating, it was just a totally different world. It was like, somebody was interested, great. If they weren't, they weren't, right? When I started this work, the idea that I could not care if somebody rejected me was like, that seemed impossible, mm-hmm. right? That was like, rejection was like death. Like, that was not.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the end, it was like, oh, yeah, well, that person didn't want to go with me yet. Okay, who's next? Like, totally chill. That's the journey.
Yeah. It's so interesting how similarly I feel to what you were just describing. There's a lot more work I have to do. Like, there's so much more insecurity left in my life. But interesting that, like, I felt the same way. I went from, like, rejection is death to a very different mindset when it came to going on a date. And you mentioned, like, then this is a specific question a listener asked, and it might just be, you know, more of the same, but, like, about feeling uncomfortable about your body or what someone might think of your body on a first date. That a listener specifically asked that for this week. And I mean, yeah, do you have any thoughts? I mean, for me, it feels like it definitely falls under everything you've said, but just more specifically.
Yeah, my thought about that is with the internet, any man you want to date with has looked at the bodies of women clothed and naked 10 million times. So if he met you in person or he saw your photos online, then he has already imagined what your body looks like and he's into it.
Such a good point. Yes.
Right? Because yes. I used to do that because your listeners can't see, but I'm a plus size woman. And I used to have this insane thought that was like, but then they'll see I'm fat. And then I finally was like, wait, a 35-year-old man who lives in New York City with access to the internet probably has watched porn of fat women. If he's into fat women, he probably knows what my body looks like. Right? Like, so as long as you, I mean, yeah, you should be worried if you put up photos that are massively different than what you look like, right? Mm-hmm. Which is also this crazy thing people do where they're like, I'll put up these photos that don't really look like me. This is how we replicate these problems, right? We're like, I believe my body's unacceptable. So I put up photos that don't look like me so that I can create the experience of going on dates and people not liking my body because I didn't show it to them. Right?
Right.
If you show people what you look like men spend a lot of time thinking, well, not everybody's dating men, but anyone, women too. If they saw what you look like, they know what your body looks like. They've seen bodies that look like yours. They know what's coming. And if by chance you take home someone who's like, oh, well, I thought you'd had a breast job and I don't like anyone who has, I mean, like it's such a bullet dodged. Like it's not like something to be upset about.
That's such a good point. Yeah. And I feel like I think I represented myself pretty honestly on dating apps, but I remember having moments, Liza, to you, like where I was like, did I like accidentally catfish or like, I just like, it's really easy to go to the looks thing if like a date doesn't work out. And again, but you explained it perfectly. Like it's another way to like beat yourself into the same old thought pattern. Totally.
And you'll notice that whatever your brain's thing is that you think people don't like about you, magically, that's always the thing that's the problem in your brain. Like, right? Like if 10 people don't want to go out with you again, my brain would be like, oh, it's because you're fat. And your brain would be like, oh, it's because I don't like, you know, this eyebrow I have, I don't like. Whatever your thing is that you're obsessed with about yourself and criticize yourself about, you just magically think that's the whole reason that everybody else would make that decision.
Yeah.
Totally. Oh, absolutely. When you really have no idea, it could be like you remind him of his third grade teacher or he's in love with his ex or he got hit by a bus. Like you have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Such a good point.
And actually, speaking of exes, so another listener question we had was just about exactly that. How do you deal with comparing yourself to someone's ex?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, we've touched on this, which is that, still.
Yeah, well, but my client, I always say to my clients, I'm only ever telling you one thing, which is your thoughts cause your feelings. I'm just telling you in 100 million different ways until it sinks in. Yeah, I mean, if you're comparing yourself to someone's ex, it's a perfect example. You're totally going to only look at the thing that you've decided is the problem, right? So if you think your weight is the problem, then like when you compare yourself to someone's ex, you're just looking at their weight and thinking about your weight. You're not even thinking about all the other things that could be going on or the ways you might be, better isn't the right word in this context, but just like things you might possess that they don't. Like your brain is just like a homing pigeon to its like thing that it hates about itself that it's looking for evidence of. I think that when people get obsessed with looking at somebody else's ex, is the question like they've broken up, it's the new person or it's the person's other, they're with the person, it's that person's exes?
Yes, their current person's exes.
Yeah. I think that's just like a beautiful example of like, if you don't manage your mind, how much it will bend over backwards to torture you. Like this person, they're no longer with that person. They're with you. And instead of enjoying your relationship, you are spending time worrying about whether the person they're no longer with is prettier than you, right? It doesn't make any sense. And it's like this weird, I think this example is going to seem relevant. We'll see. So when I'm teaching women about body image, one of the things I talk about is like, you can feel great about yourself on the beach, and then if a supermodel walks by, suddenly you feel shitty about yourself. The supermodel existed before, right? She was already around. She just wasn't in front of you, so you weren't comparing yourself to her. And I think kind of the same thing happens with the exes, right? It's like if you're, you know, if you think like, I don't know, what are people – people are usually upset about like someone being – like there's a million models in the world who are conventionally more attractive than you probably. It doesn't – you don't mostly walk around being agonizing over it, but then – when you have this one particular person to fixate on, you sort of are constantly comparing yourself.
Totally. Or like success. Like I feel like I've had issues with like people I'm dating having really successful exes. Mm. And it's a particular insecurity of mine. Like I have a very non-traditional
career. Just a mirror
for you. Measure success for me.
Totally.
Like it's something that it's very clear that like that's the reason I hang my head on that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just a mirror for you of whatever work you need to do for yourself. They're not with the person. So, I mean, I don't think it's useful to think about your ex's new partners either, but it's definitely not, right? Like thinking about somebody who's chosen to be with you now and what the last person who they're no longer with is like totally just a way to be. It's like a creative way to beat yourself up.
Yeah. It's so, very creative. Yeah. And I'm saying that as one who's done that and continues to do that because it's, you know, because even when things are working out with someone, you can find a way to make yourself.
Well, that's why you have to manage your mind because you think, oh, well, once I get a boyfriend, then I'm going to feel secure. So then you get a boyfriend and suddenly you're like, well, his ex from third grade, she looks like she's a won an Emmy or like whatever. Right? So you have to manage your mind on purpose and not like that's what happens when you just assume, okay, well, as soon as I get this thing, then I'll feel good. Your brain, if you don't change those thoughts, your brain will just find something else to use.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good point. Because I feel like I was like single forever and ever. And it, I really like the person I'm dating, you know, like I really care for him and he's really great. It's not that I feel better because I have a boyfriend. I don't feel any better about those things.
Right.
Those things are still so real. Like my body stuff. My security, all my complexes, because I have a lot of them. They're all still there. And yeah, I'm actually like, it would be scary. I know some people can like for a minute fix themselves by being with someone. Like that would be scary for me if I suddenly felt, no, it doesn't. And I've like seen that not work out for people. And I like, that's another, So while I'm still beating myself up or like can relate to that listener,
Well, I think we're sold this bill of goods, right? I mean, women are taught that falling in love and having male validation is going to be this transformative experience. And so this is the other thing I see with my clients a lot too, is like, I'm always saying like, listen, I have a partner. I'm still just, it's just, there's just another person who's around a lot. It's nice, but it's not another, it's like, they think like the world, it's like a black and white film turned to color. Like the world becomes Technicolor and then there's a unicorn and you live in a whole other dimension now, right? Like, it's like, that's what people when you're fixated on getting a partner for validation, that's what you think it's going to be like. And it's like, really not. You're still you. You still have all your same shit. There's like, it's nice to have regular orgasms and snuggling, but it's like not, right? It's not like all of a sudden your life is in Technicolor. You're on acid. It's a totally different dimension. You live in a different universe. Like, if so, everybody around you with partners would be gleefully skipping down the street, being happy all the time. And if you notice, they're not. They still have their own shit and their own problems.
Totally. And I think, funnily enough, I'm realizing in this conversation, like the way that my boyfriend makes me feel better about things is by being like, Liza, why do you think that?
Like, he's like coaching.
Like, it's not him being like, no, you're not, you're perfect, you're this, you're that. It's him being like, why are you telling yourself this? It's bullshit. And it's, you know, it's like, which is shit anyone can also do for themselves.
Right. And but I love that because it's like, because I do teach that other people don't cause our feelings. So like when your partner's helping you, it's because he's basically like unofficially coaching you to be like, you're thinking this.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
You could think this other thing.
You're whack. Hop off the train.
Right. But it's not because he can make you feel any given way. Yeah, right.
Totally.
And I just think about like when I was doing this work on myself, one of the thoughts I had all the time was, I forget who it was. It was like some supermodel. Now I use Beyonce with my clients, but I'm like, even Beyonce got cheated on. Right. Like it doesn't matter how beautiful you are or how successful you are or how talented you are or how in love with you someone is. Like there's no human life that does not involve suffering. That's just part of the human condition. And there is no one who's perfect enough that this shit doesn't happen.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, that's – I almost like feel like I've seen some – or I've heard people be like, you know, even Beyonce's life isn't perfect. But that just really resonated with me when you just said that. It's true. Like, not that I'm happy she got cheated on, but it –
Like she sits at the top of the pyramid of women.
Yeah. Right. Because women are like, oh, it happened to me because like, oh, I'm not – I should have lost the baby weight faster. Like whatever. It's like – no, you can look like Beyonce and have that many Grammy. Like, it happens to everyone. I think what I was doing was like Christie Brinkley. Some supermodel had been cheated on recently. It was in the news.
Yeah.
That's the person I used. But like, because it's so easy, we all just drink the Kool-Aid that we're taught, which is like conventional attractiveness will get you male validation and then you'll be happy forever. And that's not how it works.
Totally.
That Kool-Aid is so powerful.
So powerful.
I hope it becomes less powerful for like younger generations because –
Well, that's why I think to me managing – like I said, I've been a professional feminist my whole life. But to me, the work I do now is like the most powerful. Even though I did like abortion rights work, I did a lot of different kinds of work. Mm-hmm. Like the true liberation is inside your own brain. And there's no way to do that without changing your thoughts. Like the only way – I mean we can try to change society, but it's going to take a while. And we're going to be better at it if we manage our own mind. So to me, like learning how to undo that socialization in your own head, like that is the true liberation. Like that's the revolution.
Dude, fuck yeah. That's incredible. And I think so important because we, you know, in a lot of ways, women are achieving like all these different milestones and like also having shit taken away from us. But, you know.
We'll see how the next 18 months go.
Totally.
I'm terrified.
But like progress is not a straight line, but we have come a long way.
Totally.
But I do think this is the next frontier is like, how do we make our thinking patterns like this? How do we make that an equal playing field?
Right. And there's so much feminist energy. I'm going to totally get shit for this. But there's so much feminist energy right now that's like, the way we fix this is yell at everybody who's around still not doing it the way we want. Which I just, like, especially in online feminist spaces, I just feel like, use some of that energy, like, to change. We can't control other people. Like, yes, I think we can move society over time. And certainly if you have kids, you can try to raise them a certain way. But, like, you know, yelling at your boyfriend is not going to change his mind or how you feel. Like, change your own mind, liberate yourself, and then it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you are going to be in a better position to deal with structural inequalities if you are managing your own mind. It's a lot harder to try to make control other people's brains.
Totally. And people are drawn to that energy. Like people who walk through life confidently, it's that big dick energy thing.
That's right.
You know, people who walk through life confidently just attract good things to them, good people to them, like, the right partners, the right jobs, the right, like, all that shit.
But they may still get cheated on. Because, listen, the Buddhists are right. Like, suffering happens to everybody.
Yeah, it's true.
Because I see women use that almost against themselves. You know, it's like, oh, well, if I just had done enough thought work and I was confident enough, then this wouldn't have happened. It's like, you can control yourself. And you can control the results you create in your own life.
Yeah.
And, like, there's always going to be speed bumps. The question is, how do you deal with them? Do you make them mean something about you?
Mm.
Or do you just... like, rise again and keep going.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
So just, like, as a way to wrap up, what – if there's people out there, they're going on first dates.
Yeah.
They are, like – we have a lot of listeners who have not been big daters, and they're, like, dipping their toes in the water.
Okay.
They're going out. They're going to their first date. They've written down their negative thoughts. Like, they're trying to shed some of those insecurities. Mm-hmm. What's, like, the first step towards getting your brain in that – place that you want it to be unfucked?
I mean, honestly, I know this isn't like that pithy, but awareness is the first step. I mean, this is why meditation works for people, is that even just by itself over time, awareness will shift your thoughts. I was like, I can't spend 20 years doing this. I want to do this faster. So coaching is like much more of an active intervention in changing your thoughts. But just even, I think it's too much to say to someone like, oh, you like hate your thighs. You think no one will ever love you. You're scared to date. Like, so just love yourself on this first date. Like, you're not going to be there yet.
Yeah.
I think even just starting with a really neutral thought, like the outcome of this date doesn't determine my worth. Or like,
yeah,
you know, I'm open to believing that what I think about myself matters more than what this guy thinks about myself, thinks about me. Or I'm going to try to focus on whether I like this person, or what would I, how would I approach this if I did think I was going to, if I knew I was going to find my perfect partner, how would I approach this date? So I like, I talk, I mean, if your listeners go back and listen to my podcast, I teach a concept called the thought ladder, which is like to help you get to neutral thoughts before you get to positive ones. If I were organized, I would know the episode number, but I don't. But I think that
we'll find it and link to it.
I think the episode is called "How to Think New Thoughts" or something, or something. Who knows what I do? But
we'll
like,
put it in the description. Yeah, for people listening. We'll
so I think that's probably where I would start. And I think, I mean, I think the reason that the 51 dates work so well is like in the absence of thought work, volume is actually useful because it does some of that work for you because you just go on enough that you're like, all right, that one didn't work out. There's another one. That one didn't work out. There's another one. Like you just, it stops. It just can't be such a big deal. You can't get yourself so worked up if you're going on one or two first dates a week. So
yeah.
Yeah. That exposure thing too, you know.
Like, yeah. Like taking massive action, right? I mean, I think the other thing, one of the ways I think is really helpful for people to try to think about dating that you can practice now is like, take an area of your life where you just do what needs to happen to get something done. Like if it's work, if you're a marathon runner, if you're like whatever, there's some area of your life where you're like, I just do what I need to do to get the result I need. That's what your dating life needs to be like too. Like you want a partner, you just got to keep taking action until you get one. As opposed to making it like if you don't have a partner, all that means is you haven't taken the actions you need to get a partner. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It doesn't mean you're unworthy. It doesn't mean there's no one to love you. It doesn't mean your town is too small. It doesn't mean online dating sucks. It doesn't mean men are terrible. It means you have not taken the actions yet to get the result you want. And when you turn it more into like a project like that, it takes some of the moral and worth stuff out of it.
I feel like I should, we should have talked to you at the beginning when I was so insecure about this project because you're saying everything that I just experienced is true. I was on who was like, it's never going to happen for me. I, you know, be alone forever, unlovable, everything. I wasn't, I was staying in half relationships too long. I wasn't going on dates. I would go on, you know, five in a year, kind of like you mentioned earlier. And then obviously, even if I was like doing the good thoughts or thinking positively about myself, one bad thing and it was all over.
Right.
So that like, it's just such good advice. And I, some of our listeners have started doing experiments of their own, but like make it a project. Like that's the only reason. Because then you keep going on the dates too, and you can't put pressure on if it does work out. Like
start
this
a
was,
podcast.
Yeah,
right. And you don't make it start mean anything. Like if you know, like if I could tell you, listen, you got to go on 125 first dates to meet your person. You're not going to get to them before that. You just got to go on 125. You would just fucking do it, right? It wouldn't be such a drama. You would just be like, all right, that was date seven. I got to find an eighth person now. I'm not allowed to get my partner until I get to 125, so I just got to keep doing it, right? It's all about your mindset and what you're making the process mean.
Yeah, because I was really trying to get to 51. I made it to 32, and I met him at 13.
And that's
so,
what
like,
happens.
I really pushed it, you know. And then I was like, now it's time to, you know, really make a decision. But yeah, that's such. It's great that you're confirming what I now believe. But like, it really is.
I love that you were able to figure that out through the actions, right? I mean, I do think in the absence of anything else, committing to a number and just I have someone in my program right now. I told her she's gonna have to go on like 10 dates by the end of the program, and then she just, like, found a boyfriend. Like, I think she just, like, didn't want to go on the
dates. That's hilarious.
She got on, like, one date in the past year, and I was like, all right, we got 2 months left. You're going on 10. And then, like, by the next week, she was like, okay, I went on a first date. We're already going on a second date. Does that count? Like, she just, like, didn't want to do it.
Oh, my God.
And she was like, oh, I'm already dating.
I fixed it. I solved it.
Yeah.
But it's because the thought process trait was like, oh, all right, I just got to do what needs to be done to get it. I might as well just get it now, as opposed to using it as a green screen for all of my self-inflicted trauma.
Yeah. Well, I think that basically like super exposing yourself to things that make you uncomfortable are a way of like very tangibly doing the kind of mental work that you're used to doing. Because the more times you do those things, the more times you feel those feelings of discomfort and have to dispel them. Like, I felt this way with stand-up, or whenever we screen any videos we make, where, like, it's a surge of anxiety, and then every time you feel that surge, you're like, well, I have to move forward because I'm already here. I know this will pass because it always does. Like, you know, there are these ways that, like, your body and that adrenaline, like, you can
being willing to have that.
Stand-up is such a good example, Isa. I was thinking, like, that when you were saying that earlier, it's similar. Like, because you're going to – and you can have bad nights and have the bad feelings. Or you can, like, have, like, someone you met and it doesn't work out with, and it doesn't mean you're I quit it all. And you can be sad for a night. You can be happy for a night. Like,
I was leaving the show. I had to bum a cigarette from a stranger, and I was talking to this stranger and was like, I'm never doing comedy again. I'm quitting tonight. And, like, no. I needed to – go home and take a nap.
Yeah, cry it out. And then
just fucking do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. It was something – I was thinking about the, like, doing the 50 going – oh, this is what it is. I think also when you go on a lot of dates, what you start to – when you think about your own romantic history, right, if your story is like, nobody ever loves me, it never works out, you filter out all the people who did like you that you didn't like. It's like they don't count, right?
Oh, my God. I was always telling Kimmy. I was like, dude, if you wanted to have a boyfriend, you could have a boyfriend.
Yes. Like, I say this to my clients all the time. If your main goal in life is being married, you'd be married by now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so it's true for all of us. So one of the things I like about, like, going on a whole bunch of dates at once is, like, it's just more – you just start to see all the data together of, like, oh, right. Often I go on a date and I like the person, they don't like me. And often I go on a date and they like me and I don't like them. And we're just trying to get to that date where we both have the same opinion about it. Like, it's like musical chairs, except there's enough chairs for everyone. But, like, right? Yeah, like, that's what we're trying to get to. And when you think about it like that, it's like, yeah, it's just math. I just got to go on enough. Eventually we're going to be on the same page. So I think it's another benefit of that because so, like, women come to me and be like, well, I've just never had a real boyfriend. And I'm like, okay, tell me your relationship history. And they're like, well, I dated this guy for 5 years when I was in college, and then I lived with this guy. You know, and I'm like, what are you talking about? But because that's their story, they've just, like, completely filtered it all out somehow. Brains are crazy, really powerful.
They are really powerful.
Yeah.
It's scary. Yeah. There's a lot there. Okay. I want to get really specific, Cara, about where all of our listeners can find, obviously, your podcast, but everything. I want them to go on your site. I think there's a lot that they're going to be looking for in the immediate future to, like, start practicing these things. So
I feel fucking revved up right now. I'm like, I want to.
Me too.
I want to manage my mind. My I want to do this.
Totally. I want to unfuck my brain because my brain is already fucked just being in business school because I feel like such an imposter. Like, there's all that. Like, I'm just like, this was so helpful.
All right. Thank here's you. Your first piece of free coaching. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm an imposter is not a feeling, it's a thought. So we do this thing in English where we say, I feel, and then we just put a long string of thoughts. Like, I feel like if my husband respected me, he would take out the trash and remember my anniversary. None of that is a feeling, it's a thought. And the reason that's important is you can't change a feeling once it's happening, but you can change a thought. A thought is optional.
Oh, mind blown. Yeah.
Just notice how often you're saying, I feel like an imposter. I feel like I'm not good enough. I feel like I'm this. None of those are feelings. Those are all thoughts.
Totally. Especially because women are so often, I think, taught to express our feelings, which is great, but also to apologize for what we want by contextualizing it as a feeling. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and I just feel like you're not listening. It's like, no, I want you to listen.
Yeah.
Well, and express your feelings. You're not expressing your feelings. You're expressing your thoughts.
Yeah.
My feelings would be like, I feel sad. I feel anxious. Right. I feel angry. I feel like an imposter because all these other people have already worked at Goldman Sachs. And I that's a thought, right?
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, that's the thought.
Yeah, that's the thought. It's almost like I've done this before. And differentiating differentiating between thoughts and feelings is actually a big, important first step. So there you go. Practice that. That's your first assignment.
I love it. Yay. Thank you, Cara.
Where can people find more of this? The podcast is called Unfuck Your Brain. There's an asterisk instead of the second U.
Yeah.
You can also just find my name probably on the show notes and search that. Unfuckyourbrain.com. It's unfckyourbrain.com. If you spell it out all the way, you will go to a website that forwards to someone called the Intimacy Doctor, and that is not me. I don't know who that is, and I should buy that website, but that's not me. So if you end up at the Intimacy Doctor, you've taken a wrong turn. unfckyourbrain.com. The podcast is everywhere. You got your podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Android, whatever.
And we'll link it in the bottom the thing for this episode, the show notes.
So I would say the main thing your listeners should do if they want to do some of this work is I have a free download that's called A Confidence Cheat Sheet, but it actually is like a tiny ebook. That makes it sound too overwhelming. It's like three written exercises that are actually really great that I use with my private clients. So they're the good stuff that usually people have to pay for. So if you go to, it's unfuckyourbrain.com/cheat sheet, and it'll be linked on the episode. But that's a good way to like, if listening to this has made you be like, wait, I think I should manage my mind. That makes sense. Download that and try those exercises.
I'm going to. I have to admit that I haven't done that, so I'm going to.
Well, there's no reason you would have yet. You didn't know about it, but now you do.
Wow. I feel very great. Thank you, Kara.
I want to go like throw a brick through a window. No, right. I'm just kidding.
We're going to go and like vandalize the patriarchy after this episode's over.
I don't know, do a bunch of shots or something. No, I don't know.
Your boyfriend's going to come in. You're going to be like, I want to talk about feminist history. And he's going to be like, what happened?
I'm going to be like, damn it, again. Sit down, shut up.
If you're loving what you're learning on the podcast, you have got to come check out the Feminist Self-Help Society. It's our newly revamped community and classroom where you get individual help to better apply these concepts to your life, along with a library of next level, blow your mind coaching tools and concepts that I just can't fit in a podcast episode. It's also where you can hang out, get coached, and nerd out about all things thought work and feminist mindset with other podcast listeners just like you and me. It's my favorite place on earth and it will change your life, I guarantee it. Come join us at www.unfuckyourbrain.com/society. I can't wait to see you there. Pop quiz, have you signed up for the Happy Feminist Challenge yet? This is a brand new challenge that I am running mid-June, starts June 17th, where we are going to be learning how to create both of the two kinds of happiness. First, the happiness we get to feel as an emotion in our bodies on a day-to-day basis, which society tells us we shouldn't care about and we are guilty or selfish for even wanting to experience because we're women. And the second form of happiness, the big picture life satisfaction and fulfillment happiness, which society tells us comes from living up to impossible social standards that we can never meet. Neither of those things are frivolous, silly, or selfish. In fact, learning how to create more happiness, small and big picture in your life, is how you show up with all of your gifts and everything you can offer to the world in such a bigger, stronger way. And it just makes life a lot more fun. So I am going to be teaching you exactly how to do both those things this feminist challenge, this happy feminist challenge. Text your email to +1-347-997-1784. And the code word is happy, or go to unfuckyourbrain.com/happy. I can't wait to get happier with all of you. I'll see you there.